This is the podcast of Theophilus Church. For more information, visit our website at theophiluschurch.com.
From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is His name. His mercy extends to those who fear Him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with His arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped His servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, even as He said to our fathers. This is the word of the Lord.
Merry Christmas, Theophilus. Right, I had to turn on the lights because I woke up this morning, and as soon as I woke up, it was like knives like gouging my throat, and I didn't sleep very well, and I've been like dragging all day. Last week, I'm standing here in front of you, weeping my eyes out as we're like mourning as a community, and it's this really disorienting feeling of like going from this state of mourning to like, Jesus is born, let's rejoice, right? And we're here today to worship together, to celebrate the birth of Jesus. So before we get started, we have a small gathering this evening, and so many of us know each other at a deep, deep level. And you know, if you know my story, that this past year has been a season where God has been working in me internally as I've been dealing with and coming to terms with this struggle with anxiety that I've had in my life that I've never had before. And it's been this really disorienting process of walking through, like trying to identify what this anxiety is rooted in and how to deal with it and how to come to grips with it. And so moments like this, when I get up and I share with people that I love, sometimes can be the most joyful experiences, and sometimes it can be the most anxiety-ridden experiences, like these triggering moments. But today, when we're going to walk through this story of Mary receiving this message that she's going to bear Jesus, the Messiah, and birth Him, it reminds me that this season is a story of an anxiety-free God who takes His time and goes through this beautiful process to be born among us. And He goes through this process that is filled with all of these questions and all of these unknowns that we're going to talk about tonight. And so tonight, as we're here, if you feel overwhelmed and burdened with this season, if you feel stressed, if you feel the weight of anxiety in your life for one reason or another, I just want to invite us collectively, this is for me and this is for us as a congregation, to just let the anxiety to just woof, go out into that rain. It can go to the place that is not heaven, if you know what I mean. So tonight, we're going to celebrate. We're going to celebrate the anxiety-free God who leads us to some really remarkable places. We're going to start tonight with the progression. There's three layers to the story. Andy just read, starting from when Elizabeth and Mary meet after Mary has been told that she's going to give birth to the Messiah. We're actually going to start one step prior to that, because I think there's a little part prior to that reading that is pretty remarkable what happens to Mary. Then we're going to talk about this visitation, Mary and Elizabeth coming together, and what Mary's response is out of this birth, and what this can teach us about our Christian walk and what the birth of Jesus calls us into. So that's going to be kind of the progression of this evening. You see, right before this passage, Mary gets a visit. She's at home. Most scholars believe that Mary was undoubtedly this young girl, maybe in Hebrew tradition, maybe even as young as 12 years old. We don't really know, but she's young. And she's at home. She's probably pretty poor. She lives in Nazareth. And she just goes in her day-to-day. She lives in a society that doesn't necessarily have a lot of use for young women. They kind of help mom and help household make the rhythms of life happen. She's betrothed, meaning that she's engaged to be married to this guy, Joseph. And that carries some social weight or capital in society. She's kind of marked, ready to be married. She's of that age. And she gets this visit that startles her. She's in her room or somewhere in her home, and the angel Gabriel visits her and gives her this news. Now, what's important to note is as Luke, this is in Luke chapter 1, so there's not much that happened right before that. 2 weeks ago, Andy Campbell preached about how Zechariah was in the temple. He was in the temple and he was a priest, and he was taking offerings of the people and presenting them to the Lord. And this exact same scene happened to Zechariah. Now, Zechariah became the father of John the Baptist. But the angel comes to him and tells him, your wife, even though she is too old to give birth to a child, she's going to have a child in her old age. It's the same startling scene where this angel is meeting John in a place that he should not be. John, when he's giving offerings in the Holy of Holies to the people, he's supposed to be alone. Guys don't just slip in the back door and say, hey, guess what? I got some news for you, right? So it's a really startling scene. The same scene for Mary with the same news. But their life circumstances have them at opposite ends of the spectrum. For John, or for Zechariah, it's your wife, even though you guys have been praying your entire lives to bear a son, to have a child, you've been requesting of me time and time again. Guess what? Now that you're 75 years old, or however you do, older you are, now is your time, John. And we know from Andy's sermon what his response was. He says, how the heck is this possible? I'm 75 years old. And what is Gabriel's response to Zechariah? We don't get much dialogue. The angel is kind of not having it from Zechariah. And he says, guess what, old man? You're in here bringing these offerings of the people to the Holy of Holies, and you don't get it, so shut your mouth. You're not going to speak. And you're going to learn to listen to the Spirit. Quiet. And he shuts his mouth. Zechariah can't talk. Now we get to the next scene. Same exact situation. Mary, though, instead of the Holy of Holies, she's in her room. And the angel Gabriel visits her and says, Mary, I have news for you. You are going to give birth to the Messiah, the expected one. And what is Mary's response? It's actually really intriguing. Mary has the exact same response as Zechariah. Same scene, same pattern, same response. She says, whoa, how is this going to happen? I'm engaged to be married, but I've never been with a man. Can you explain to me how this is going to happen? And patiently, the angel Gabriel explains to her that the power of the Spirit is going to come upon her. And it's the same language that is used when the temple when Israel is wandering through the desert in Exodus, when the cloud settles on the tabernacle. It's like this image of like setting on top of you, the Spirit. It's this metaphor that he's using, this imagery. And it's through the power of the Spirit that you are going to give birth. And Mary's response is like, I'm in. Yes. Blessed am I. Blessed am I to receive this. Now, let's pause there for just a second and let's like analyze these, because it's not coincidental that these two stories, anytime that there's repetition in the Bible like that, that's paired closely together, we need to pay attention and clue in. Now we're left to kind of speculate. We don't know I can't tell you exactly what was running through and what the heart behind Zechariah's response was or of Mary's. But if I had my guess as a scene, I would guess that there was perhaps a little bit different spirit or life experience or life patterns that infected or affected the way in which they responded to Gabriel. Let me give like a silly example that probably falls radically short, but I'll try nevertheless. Imagine we're in a room and we're talking about the wonders of Christmas, the magic of Christmas, right? And we're in a room and we have adults and we have children lying around, and somebody says, like, tonight, after the sun goes, there's going to be these reindeer, and they land on the roof, and Santa is going to come into the house and lay presents under the tree, right? And they're going to lay presents under the tree, and when you come out, if you've been on the nice list, you're going to get presents, and if you're on the naughty list, your stocking will be filled with coal. Now, those of us with life experience in that room, we stand up and we say, tell me, how does he get into this house? Can you explain the details of how this magic is going to happen? And then the child, with wonder in their eye, says, Mom, Dad, how does he come down the chimney? How does he get in? How does he fit? Right? One behind the response is this spirit of, explain to me the details, would you? Right? And the other is this spirit of mystery, full of belief and anticipation and wonder. Same question, same rhetorical response, and or one's rhetorical and perhaps one is not. Perhaps one is an example of, oh my gosh, I believe this can happen. Can you explain to me how this miracle is going to take place? Now, I think it is one of the biggest, like, tragedies, honestly, maybe not one of the biggest, but I think it's a tragedy within our tradition, within evangelicalism, that Mary is kind of reduced to this, like, she's kind of cool. She gave birth to Jesus, but we don't know anything other than her than she gave birth to Jesus, and then we see her at the cross later down. So, yeah, she's okay, right? I want us to enter into the story of Mary at this moment and ponder just how remarkable this young woman was. Now, what can you imagine? Can you imagine what you would be feeling if you are a young 12-year-old, 13, 14-year-old, I don't know how you are, young girl who is about to get married in a culture where your honor, there's this direct correlation to honor of the family name and sexual purity and all of these things. This is all a part of your story and your culture and your people. You have a fiance who lives three doors down, excited to marry you, and you get news that you are going to have a child. Now, time out. If my daughter went off to, like, summer camp and comes home and goes, hey, Dad, let me explain. Now, hold your response, but let me explain this really cool opportunity I have. Right? When we were at the altar, the Spirit of God came on me and told me I'm going to give birth to the Messiah. But I have to say if I'm cool with that or not. Are you in? Right? What's going on in her head about how this is going to change her life? Infect her from the inside out, quite literally, in every way possible. Because conceding is not just saying, yes, I want the honor of birthing the Messiah. It's, I'm allowing you to invade my space entirely. To change me from the inside out to where my hormonal system and everything will change, will respond. My life rhythms will change because I said, yes, Lord, fill me. Do this through me. That's the remarkable power of this decision, of this young woman. This is the decision that she is faced with. And we get this, like, very quick, like, oh my gosh,
It's like this girl running in circles like, me, I've been chosen. I've been chosen to be the one to set the people free. The Messiah is going to come through me. Right? From a father's perspective that has life experience and wisdom, it's like, whoa, slow this ship down. Have you considered what your future occupation is going to be and how this will affect that? Have you considered what your husband-to-be is going to say, knowing that this child is not his? Have you considered what this is going to do to our family name, and we have to face our neighbors and say, yes, it's the Holy Spirit's child? Right? This is madness. This is insanity. And Mary says, yes, Lord, change me. Infect me from the inside out. Some church fathers, some of the monastic leaders say that Mary's story is actually the exact reversal of the Eden story of Eve. Because imagine this, right? In the Garden of Eden, you have Adam and Eve, and God tells Adam and Eve, look at all of this beautiful fruit. Look at life. Look at everything that you have. It's all yours to eat. Everything is yours. Except there's one tree in the middle. Don't eat of that tree. But Adam and Eve, overcome and overwhelmed about all the potentials of life, what is that fruit going to taste like? What am I missing out on by not partaking? Now the questions of the what ifs, the oh my gosh, what am I missing out on if I'm obedient to this, overwhelm Adam and Eve. And so the consequence of that, allowing that anxiety, the what ifs, to take control of their lives and to consume them, drives them to partake of that fruit. They grab the fruit, they eat it, and everything changes. Their life changes. Where Mary, she says, she has her life before her. Her marriage is lined up. Her honor is intact. Everything is lined up. And God says, there's one thing, there's a task I want to give to you if you would accept it. And she has to weigh out, what in life am I missing out on by accepting this? What will I lose? How will my life change if I say yes? And her decision is to go to that, to respond to that with an affirmative, yes, Lord. And through her obedience, the story of Eden begins to get reversed. It's through obedience, it's through this long, patient obedience that God is like reversing our story through somebody who is willing to sacrifice their life or to take on the responsibility and to allow the Spirit of God to consume her from the inside out. Then we get to the next scene. This scene is so powerful. If you really think about it, this next scene is literally the first gathering, the first worship service, the first corporate worship gathering between people oriented around Jesus. Mary is in her home country. It's about 90 minutes away. Don't quote me on this, but if I had to guess, I would guess she didn't take an Uber, right? She's 90 minutes away. She has mountains to cross. She lives in Nazareth, a poor town in the north, and she has to go down to Judea. Where Mary? Why does she go? Have you ever been like, have you ever had a life circumstance happen to you where it's like, it's so monumental that A, you just have to either get around people who can empathize with you, who can know what you're saying and know what you're feeling, or you just need to get around the people that you love and that are going to believe you and not look at you like you're a lunatic, right? So Mary, this young pregnant woman, gets on probably a 4 to 8 day journey, traveling through mountains to go and see her cousin Elizabeth, who had the same visitation, who John was growing in this old woman's womb. You have these two women who are having this shared experience, and Mary gets to the door, and there's this beautiful picture. She gets to the door, and Elizabeth comes running, and Mary, and she's like, "Whoa, what honor do I have that my Lord, the bearer of my Lord, would come and visit me?" And the moment that Mary speaks, John in Elizabeth's womb leaps, jumps. Now, these are the hyper-spiritual people that we get so annoyed with, right? It's like the people that, like, we walk in for a party, and they're like, "Hey, good to see you." And then the pregnant lady is like, "Oh, my baby loves you. It leaped in my belly." Like, there's some connection. There's a spiritual connection that we got going on here, right? And we're like, "Oh, geez, these people," right? And, but this is the scene. It's like there is something going on in the spiritual realm here. There is a connection that we understand, that we get. And as a process of us coming together, of these two people who live these absurd lives, who are living these absurd realities, are coming together, and the byproduct of these two kindred spirits coming together is something inside of them wells up and leaps. It rejoices. That, to me, is perhaps one of the most beautiful images of why we even do what we do. Why we gather here, week in and week out. We need to be reminded that we come to hear and we share because I have felt the leap of the Spirit in my heart. And so have you, if Christ lives in you. And we come together and our experiences are so different. Our life circumstances are so different. But there's something that the Spirit has done inside of us that draws us together in a way that the world sees as utterly insane. And yet something is dancing inside. And I think it's when we forget that, right? Because our life moves on. We're not pregnant forever. We don't feel that bouncing inside of us forever, right? And sometimes perhaps, I don't know, I've never felt that in the pregnant sense. But perhaps as time goes on, we forget what that feeling is. And we grow tired of the people who can't stop talking about it. And they're experiencing it for the first time. And it's this wondrous thing. And we're like, "Yeah, we've done it 6 times, 7 times. Been there, done that." Like, calm down a little bit, right? Could we just enjoy the Spirit of God moving in our midst to the point to where, like, we are reminded that this is the whole essence of why we get together? It's that God lives in us, and we get to share in that, and we get to celebrate that with one another. You know, Mary ends up, she goes on and she has this child and she bears Jesus. And I think one of the greatest tragedies, I don't know if it's a tragedy or if it's a blessing because we get to really settle in and allow our imagination to just take over. But Mary gets to raise Jesus. We don't know anything of Mary other than giving birth and then later on in life, like kind of at the cross. That's what we know of Mary. But let's just ponder the character of God through Jesus. Because what we've talked about so far and how it applies to our lives is that the Christian life is really characterized in this story, where God comes in, and he gives you and I an invitation to take over our lives, to infect us from the inside out. And it changes absolutely everything. And for our 21st century Western sentiments, that is very invasive. That's insulting in a lot of ways. Please allow me to, right? But let's for a second consider what the character of this God is that wants to transform us from the inside out. We need to be reminded that the God of the universe who formed you, who created you in your mother's womb, who made the trees that supply us oxygen and the galaxy that is expanding till who knows where, that God who spent all that into motion decided to humble himself to the point of being a baby birthed in this young girl's body, surrendered himself to be taken care of by this child, meaning that he subjected himself to being abandoned or abused or manipulated. He subjected himself to these things. And though Mary's experience of conceiving or having this child in her and birthing the Messiah is this remarkable experience, we can't forget the life patterns that she went through. She also was annoyed by the God of this universe, quite literally. When she was making meals for her kids, Jesus is in the other room screaming, "I'm all done, I'm all done," right? And it was Mary who responded to Jesus. It was Mary who had to set boundaries for the God of this universe, for Jesus, for Emmanuel, God with us. She set boundaries. She was the one that yelled down the street at night, "Street lights are on, time to come home." And he's like, "Mom!" This is the human relationship that Mary got to experience with Jesus. She had permission because she was his mom to be annoyed with Jesus. I'm sure they got in arguments and they went back and forth because that's what humans who love each other and would give their lives for each other, that's the kind of human relationship that we all experience and that we are drawn into. And it tells us that, yes, the invitation to be overcome and overwhelmed by this God of the universe is a dramatic invitation. It changes everything. But it is also coming from the character of a God who would humble himself to such a point that he would entrust himself with a person like Mary. And would entrust himself with you. If he could handle Mary getting frustrated with him or setting boundaries with him or whatever, perhaps he could handle an honest exchange with you and I, who he desires to fill from the inside out. Perhaps he's not intimidated by our humanity because he knows it and he formed it. This passage ends with Mary reading out this song of praise. That's how she responds to this news. All but one line in this whole passage is quotes from the Old Testament, where this 12-year-old girl had heard the stories of how God had planned to redeem Israel, to set them free, and it was going to come through a Messiah. She knew these stories. They were implanted deep in her heart. And she's coming to this realization that it was her who God was going to choose to make all of this come. And it wells her up by so much that all of those things that are just buried inside of her that she had heard over and repeated over and over and over again well out with her in this song, this praise, and she's overwhelmed with joy. And she sings. She sings scripture. That's what she's doing. My prayer for Theophilus Church, as we enter into a new season that is couched with a whole world of unknowns, What does tomorrow hold? We're about as sure as that as Mary was sure of what it was going to be like raising adolescent Jesus. That's about all we got. We can anticipate, we can dream, but we can't know. We don't know. But what we do know is that the God of this universe has invited us to participate in his story. And with that, he comes inside and he wells up and he draws us together in a way where his desire is for the Spirit in me to communicate with the Spirit in you so that it causes this leap inside of us and we can actually, as followers of Jesus, experience joy together and not feel shame about expressing and dancing because, man, that is good life-changing news that changes everything. That's my prayer, is that we, as followers of Jesus, as a community of Theophilus, as we enter into this new year, this new season, that we just allow ourselves to be overcome by the Spirit. Allow ourselves to express joy when we're expressing joy, and give ourselves permission, like Mary had permission, when she's angry with Jesus or frustrated with Jesus, that she can process those things and know that she's in this deep, deep-seated relationship with God. That we form that kind of intimacy and relationship with the God of this universe who chose on this day or in this season to come among us to be birthed so that we can participate in him, reversing the story that was started in Eden and drawing us into that deep-seated relationship where we can now enter in that same story. Amen? Let's rejoice in that. You know, it's kind of strange on a day like Christmas where we are still going to come to the table. We're still going to participate in Easter right here, right? The body and the blood of Jesus. This, to me, is kind of like that exclamation mark on the humility of Jesus, that character that we talked about. Not only did he come in as a child in the state of complete and utter humility it doesn't get any more humble than that. He left in a similar state. He left in complete and utter humility. He surrendered himself in that same humility from the time he was born until the time that humanity killed him. And it is only through the posture of resurrection that he chose to turn it all upside down. Yeah. That is the character of the God we serve. Exceedingly patient, uncomfortably patient, and kind. And we come to this table to partake of him week in and week out because, doggone it, that kind of character is worth it. That's what we get to be invited into and partake of and to allow to infect us. So that is what we invite you to. As we come to the table, celebrate the birth of Jesus, we also celebrate his death because we're celebrating his humility, the character of God that transforms us from the inside out. Worship team, come on up. If you're serving communion, please come forward. All are welcome. There's gluten-free elements at all table, at all stations. There's a station in the back. You up here, linger at the altar. Come to the table and partake of the body and the blood.
You've been listening to the podcast of Theophilus Church. We hope you've been inspired and challenged by what you've heard. For more information, visit our website at TheophilusChurch.com.